Why do we make legal agreements with each other? Welcome to The Good Word. I'm Brant Berglund, your host and study guide author this quarter, and we're continuing a 13-week series on the subject of the covenants in the Bible. My conversation partners throughout this quarter are Dr. Alden Thompson, Professor Emeritus here at Walla Walla University in the School of Theology, and Sean Carpenter, who has been teaching some classes for us as well as a contract teacher and has some background in missiology. I'm delighted that you're both here joining me. Back to our opening question, why do we make legal agreements with each other in culture? I think a lot of cultures do that. Why do we do this?
Better fences make better neighbors.
Say more. Say more. What does that mean?
Wow. Now you've got me stumped. I thought I was going to get away with some colloquialism and just run. But, I think that when we go, let's say you go into business with somebody, and this is your best friend, and you've enjoyed many evenings at their house and many meals at their house, and you love each other and you trust each other fully. But when you go into a business together, it's a new endeavor, and it's something where you need to have things spelled out that if this happens, what do I do? And by creating that fence, so to speak, now we have boundaries. Just like in relationships, I think that those of us who are married know that boundaries are really important.
And to have a public ceremony where you promise in the front of witnesses that you're promising to each other. Now, in business, we don't usually have a whole church full of witnesses.
Maybe we should.
But there is something to be said for a formal agreement.
Yeah.
Now, it's often said of some people, his word is as good as, his signature. But there is a tendency, if you don't sign the document, you weasel out of it. You can weasel out of it. Whereas if you sign something, especially if it is notarized, then you have to take it more seriously.
What does that legal agreement do to a relationship? What role does it play within, and Sean, you started to allude to it by talking about business partners, and then Alden, you took it with marriage a little bit. What does the legal agreement do within the relationship? What protections does it offer, or what sort of expectations does it create?
I'm actually remembering the day that I signed my marriage license in front of 700 people. And I think my hand was a little shaky that day, maybe as much from performance anxiety as anything else. But there, when you sign that agreement in a wedding vow, you're also thinking about the times when you might be tempted to move away from the relationship. And I think that was probably the most important thing for me is when I signed that agreement, that contract with my wife. It was me telling her that even if you do this, 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 and this, I will still do this, this, and this.
Your word is your bond. You're giving enough of yourself to her so she knows what to expect. And we'll talk a little more about marriage later, but when we make those marriage vows, we often make them based on an ideal, don't we? And that ideal is, I promise to love and cherish you in rich times and poor times, in sickness and in health, for better or for worse. And what often I think happens is those really rich and really poor times maybe aren't the norm, and the really sick times and the really well times maybe aren't the norm. It's more the mundane times, right? Mm-hmm. And so we make those commitments, and yet do we keep them always? In the marriage, do we say words that are sometimes not as kind? Mm. Do things that let our partner down? It's like, did we violate the covenant by doing that?
Mm. Mm. The one story in the Bible that really reveals the process of making the covenant is the story of the covenant that God made with Abraham, Genesis 15, where he took the animals, divided them, and birds. And I've heard it said by scholars that, you know, that if you don't keep the covenant, then this dividing is something that will take place with you. In other words, you will be divided. Hmm. So it's a very serious business to cut a covenant.
To cut a covenant, yeah.
Yeah, that's the key phrase.
And my thought when I've read that in the past was that, and I've read of ancient suzerain vassal treaties that kings and vassals would make, but that they would both pass through those cut animals, and both parties would have a role to play. And we'll look a little more at the covenant that God makes with Abram in chapter 15 a little later in a later lesson. But it seems important in this case to note that only God passes through those animals. And I wonder also if there's a sense of if you violate the covenant, that it doesn't just mean let this happen to you, but it also speaks to the dividing of relationships. What happens if you renege on a business deal? What happens if you give your word to your best friend that you'll do something and then don't come through? What happens if you violate your marriage vows, your marriage covenant? Hopefully it is to your best friend and it's a promise. What happens to the relationship if we violate those terms?
Well, I think that the greatest danger, certainly in a marriage, is a broken promise. And I believe that one of the reasons why we have marriages in front of witnesses is that you're basically saying to those people, we want your help.
Yeah.
To help us keep our promises. And we're doing this here in front of all of you. So that's, I think, something that we need to keep in mind.
That level of accountability that comes with others.
You know, there's a difference between the marital contract and the contract that Brant was just talking about. I get really excited about this contract that happens between when God and Abraham have the animals that they've cut in half, and they're supposed to walk through them. And my understanding, and you'll have to correct me if I'm wrong, but my understanding is that there is the idea that if I break my end of the deal, that may whatever happened to these animals that
happened
are
to me.
Cut, yeah, may this happen to me. And my other understanding is that if a king and a vassal are entering into a contract, that the king oftentimes doesn't walk through those.
It is only the vassal then.
It is only the vassal. And so I think what just amazes me about this story is that God then flips it on its head.
Flips the script. Yeah.
Flips the script. Mm-hmm. And all of a sudden, in essence, what God is saying is, hey, we're going to make this contract, but if it gets messed up by either me or by you, I'm going to bear the responsibility for this.
And this becomes a significant story throughout our quarterly and our study of the covenants. One of the things that disturbed me just a little bit throughout the quarter and the quarterly's focus was on the obedience required by the people of God to keep the covenant. And yet what I noticed throughout the covenant was every time God made a covenant, almost all the obligations were on his side, and almost all the penalties were on his side as well. The people's role, yes, there was a sense of obedience in the covenant, and yet so often it was God's obligation to bear the punishment of the broken covenant. And that told me that I think the quarterly pushed the obedience idea over and over, and yet the graciousness of the character of God somehow to me got lost a little bit in the quarter. And maybe you didn't sense that in reading through it, but you know, our quarterly this week kind of walks through a couple of the main covenants. It talks about the Hebrew word for covenant, which is berit, and where it shows up in the Bible. It shows up with Noah, it shows up with Abram in Genesis 12 and 15 and 17. It shows up in Exodus 2 and 3 and 4 with the Israelites in the Egyptian slavery, and then it talks about the new covenant with Jeremiah in chapter 31. But it made me wonder, as it kind of highlighted those, are there other covenants in the Bible that are mentioned that aren't included here? Are there other covenants you can think of that the quarterly didn't mention that maybe are important? And I'll just throw one out that I thought of, and that was the covenant that it seemed like God made with David, that if David walked in the ways of the Lord and was a faithful king, and then with Solomon his son, that they would never lack a king to sit on the throne of Judah, that they would be a perpetual dynasty, a perpetual kingship. And that seemed like, to me, an important covenant, because when Solomon builds the temple, he refers to the covenant that God made with his father and with him and with Israel over and over and over. Are there other covenants you can think of that are made in Scripture that maybe weren't included in this short list that are significant? Or are these the main ones? Are these the ones?
I think those are the main ones. What is amazing, however, is that you have some of this come out in the Psalms, where the psalmist reports all these promises to David, and now they lie shattered. See? And so it's the idea of God coming back. And as you read through Scripture, there are passages that sound like if you turn away, that's the end of it. But there are other passages which say, even if you turn away, I will restore you.
Yeah, and we'll see that with the new covenant, certainly. One of the things I wanted to note, our time is almost up here, but in each of these experiences, Adam and Noah and Abram and we could include King David and Jeremiah with the new covenant, hundreds of years at least intervene between each of these covenant visitations of God. And it makes me wonder why, you know, we think, is God still present? Is he still in our world? How long has it been since he spoke to us about covenant? And how long did they have to wait? And why doesn't he speak to all of us individually about it? Maybe he does. One question I'd like to leave with everybody in kind of an open-ended way. What does God hope to accomplish by making covenants with his people? What is he hoping to accomplish? We'll talk about that more throughout this quarter. Want to say thank you again to Alden Thompson and Sean Carpenter, my guests, my colleagues today, and also to Samuel Schaffner and our whole program engineering team. And to all of you who are listening in, thank you for being here for The Good Word. I'm Brant Berglund.
You've been listening to Good Word, a production of the School of Theology at Walla Walla University and KGTS-FM. To order a copy of today's broadcast, you can call 509-527-2194. Thanks for listening, and we'll be here next week at this time with Good Word.